The Steve Cochran Show.
Say that our police officers put their life on the line every day is no hyperbole, ladies and gentlemen.
The suspect that we are negotiating with that has exchanged gunfire with us over the last 45 minutes has told our negotiators that the end is coming.
We also know that when people are armed with powerful weapons, unfortunately, it makes attacks like these more deadly and more tragic.
And he's going to hurt and kill more of us, meaning law enforcement, and that there are bombs all over the place in this garage and in downtown.
In the meantime, today, our focus is on the victims and their families. They are heartbroken. The entire city of Dallas is grieving. Police across America, which is a tight-knit family, feels this loss to their core. And we're grieving with them.
6:09, you're waking up to one of the worst stories we've had all year. Can you imagine that? In the midst of all the bad news we've had, you can actually say that? Five Dallas police officers were murdered last night at the end of a Black Lives Matter protest by at least two snipers from elevated positions in Dallas. Thick with irony, shots rang out, five killed, six wounded. These are all cops. Of those six who were wounded, we don't know the status of where they are medically. As Andrea said, the big story at 7:30 will be specifically the press conference from the Dallas Police Department. If they're running late or whatever the case may be, we'll take it when it hits. But you wake up this morning to the worst case of violence on cops or death of cops trying to do their jobs since 9/11. And you know, you start with the obvious here. Is this about Black Lives Matter and is this about the protests? Well, we don't know that. It was very highly planned and strategic to a point where it appears that the snipers who fired these shots off are using the protest as cover. But I don't know that. That's just an assumption at this point. And that's the problem with the first few minutes ago or the first few hours ago after something like this, because we're, what, 4 hours later? Mm-hmm. We're talking about 2:00 in the morning when the snipers engaged in this fire for an hour. By the way, everything you want to know about what a good cop does, imagine being a police officer. You're in Dallas. You know cops are dead, and you know cops are injured, and you've got a suspect cornered in a parking structure, in a parking garage, and negotiators try to talk that guy out of creating a scenario where either he's going to kill himself or they're going to have to kill him, knowing that he has killed cops.
And knowing that he told them more police officers
exactly
are at risk.
And that suspect is dead. Now, the nature of how he died, again, we don't know that. These are all pieces that need to be filled in a world where we want the answers and we want them immediately. We don't have them. In addition to that, the protesters that were on the street were protected by cops. Cops throwing themselves on top of the protesters. There's video of this all over, of course, and there's including video of the shooters. It's unbelievable to me that at least one, if not both of the shooters may have gotten away. We don't know if this guy who was caught in the parking garage was actually one of the snipers or was somebody else. We do know that no bombs have been found, no explosives have been found. We don't know if that was just noise or if there is something to be found. There is a Black Lives Matter protester who is carrying a sign that said, "No justice, no peace," when the shots rang out, standing next to a cop who shoved the protester inside a building and was wounded by shots as he protected that kid. That's what good cops do. Now, to take the alternate side of this, the other part of this is obvious, too. If you assume all black kids or all black protesters are somehow involved in this, you're out of your mind. That's just as racist, and that's just as outlandish. Because, you know, you think about it, we always think of racism as white people, thinking less of black people or people of color. Here's a bulletin. Black people are racist, too. If you wake up and you believe there's nothing but white cops hunting black kids, as many news outlets broadcast again this week, that's completely racist, and both are wrong. As usual, the far fringe views on either side are just flat wrong. But if you wake up in this country this morning and you're not sick to your stomach, I don't know what you're doing. Because when is it going to end? How do you get up this morning as a cop and do your job? How do you get up in Chicago and go into work and do your job? How do you kiss your kids goodbye, kiss your wife or your husband goodbye and go into work and do your job? Now, you're not to look around and assume that the next time you have an altercation with somebody that they have a gun and maybe your trigger finger is a little itchier than it used to be. And again, take the flip side of that. You're a kid trying to go to school. You know, you're in where? You're in Auburn Gresham. You're in Ingleside or West Ingleside or you're in Riverdale.
Inglewood, yeah.
Or Inglewood, sorry.
Yeah.
And how do you just go to school or do whatever you do just to be a good kid going through life? And maybe you come across a neighborhood where, or part of your neighborhood where there's more trouble and suddenly there's cops and suddenly you're one of the bad guys. And you're not a bad guy. You're just a kid trying to go to school or come back. How is that fair to you? We got to figure out a way to get along. This is insane. This isn't a movie. This isn't a TV show. This is life. These are real people who are dying every single day. And for every cop that died last night and every cop that was injured, they represent the safety and protection of hundreds, if not thousands. And the vast majority of the Black Lives Matter protesters who are there are also sick to their stomach that this happened.
There's some very powerful video of all of this, and there's two scenes in particular. One is when one of the police officers was shot, how some of the protesters immediately were trying to help and
right.
stop the bleeding. And then there's another image, Steve, where there was a baby carriage, and a bunch of the protesters
picked up the baby carriage
and started running for shelter.
Now, we have a media responsibility to this, too, which needs to be addressed. And I always fall back on CNN because I watch it more than I watch others. But the hypocritical behavior of CNN, of MSNBC, of Fox, of local news, when you have the power of video, because you can choose anything you want to watch, and you can certainly choose anything you want to watch online, but there's still a certain responsibility for media outlets and major media outlets to do the right thing. There's no reason, knowing full well there's no direct linkage between what happened in Minneapolis and Baton Rouge this week. There's no direct linkage between that and what happened in Dallas. But common sense would tell you it's hard not to make that tie. And when you show video, I don't care how many times you say the video you're about to see is graphic. When you show video of a bloodstained man dying and his girlfriend with a 4-year-old in the back seat doing a Facebook Live video of what has just happened, and you show it over and over and over again, you are going to fire people up. And the only reason CNN or anybody else does it is for ratings. It's the absolute truth. You know, there's a reason we don't run 911 calls on this show, because I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to be a part of that nonsense. You know, you want that? Go find it. Go find it on the internet. Go watch it. It's not going to happen here. And my hope would be that this company takes a policy and stands up and takes a policy for the largest television operator in the country to knock that stuff down.
Oh, they usually do. Channel 9 is very good about that.
Just outrageous. It's just sickening and it's awful. So, this is not a Black Lives Matter problem. This is not a cop problem. This is a problem for everybody. All of us. Every one of us. And if you want to live in a country where you can get up and go to school or go to work and go to a movie and go out to dinner and not worry about your own safety, well, you damn well better be concerned about this. Because what happened last night in Dallas could have happened in Chicago. It could have happened anywhere that you are this morning. The Chicago Police Department is, what's the term we discussed off here?
An all call.
Which I believe, I could be wrong, cops can call and tell us or text us if we're wrong about this. I think an all-call is everybody is responsible for whatever duty stations they have for that day. So in other words, if you're off today, you could be called in. Is that right?
Correct.
I think that's
how I see it as well. Or that's how I understand it to be.
Yeah. So the Chicago Police Department's at the ready if more police are needed. Hopefully anything close to what happened there is going to happen here or anywhere. And the mayor, we're also reaching out to the mayor to see if he wants to make a statement as well. In the meantime, we're going to do a show today. We have a lot planned, and we're going to do a show because we're just not going to go wall to wall, end to end, telling you the same thing over and over again. So we'll continue with that in a few minutes. As a matter of fact, I want to talk to Lou. I don't know if Lou's willing to come on in the middle of this, but I hope he is. So we'll get to Lou Manfredini in a moment. We'll talk a little bit about his show tomorrow and other things, and we'll bounce back and forth to this, as awkward as it may feel, but I think it's the right thing to do.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
621, number is 312-981-7200. Yes, you can call and ask Lou a question. We're not going to do as much of that as we normally do for obvious reasons. But, you know, Lou, you and I are about the same age. And it's just, you wake up to this, and it's just, it's hard not to curse. It's just so outrageous that this is happening really is. In the United States of America.
I woke up early this morning and saw the news, and this is not the answer. I mean, I realize people are angry about what's going on, and we absolutely should ask lots of questions, but violence does not stop violence. I mean,
the greatest social change in this country occurred when the leader of that social change was a man who preached peace.
Right.
Martin Luther King, in his short life, did more to advance social change and civil rights than any white man, black man, or any other man or woman has ever done in our lifetime. And he preached peace. This doesn't solve anything. This makes everything worse. Everything.
It does. It does. And just those officers that are doing their job, protecting the people that were there. And it's just, it is a senseless thing, Steve. And as we get older, we realize that, I mean, for all of us, it doesn't matter what your age is, but we have to, love has to be the answer. Love and understanding and conversation and respect, and these officers are out there doing the job to keep us protected. And yes, some people make mistakes that happen to be in uniform, whatever that case may be, but the continued violence, this is this coordinated attack, it's just completely senseless.
You know, and the thing is, too, the outrageous thing is, because news by nature is what it is, the squeaky wheel always gets the grease. So the loudest noise, which always comes from the fringe, seems to represent the masses, and nothing could be further from the truth. The vast majority of white people get it. They're not racist. They don't get up in the morning and go, black people are less because they're black and brown people are less because they're brown. Here's a bulletin. The vast majority of black people and brown people aren't racist. They get up in the morning, they want the same thing that white folks want. Let's just figure it out. Let's stop calling each other names. Let's just get along.
Yeah, we need to be just colorblind in this nation and in all nations and have respect. The thing that worries me the most is that the lack of respect for life on all fronts for these, and like you said, the vast majority of people aren't doing these terrible things. I mean, these are twisted, angry, vicious people that take out these, that do these types of things. And so that's not the core of who this country is and who we are. But we all have to lock our arms together and say no more, no more.
You know, you mentioned the age thing. I do think it makes a difference, though, when you get older, because as you get older, you have more appreciation, respect for life, because occasionally you look at the clock and you go, you know, maybe I got 20, 25 good years left before everything starts falling off me.
Right.
And the fact is, you look at your kids.
A couple things have fallen off of you already.
Yes, they have. And that's what duct tape's for. But you look at your kids, or in my case, I saw Abigail Grace yesterday, and I look at this beautiful little granddaughter, my first grandchild, 6 months old, and I think, well, God, this, all those cliches that you always heard, people go, oh, what kind of a world are we bringing children into? Well, you're bringing children into a great world. But it's got to be a world you care enough about to stop the madness. And that's all this is. It's just absolutely outrageous and madness.
Agreed.
So I don't know, man. I don't know. It's the time for people to have the courage to do the right thing. Do I have any faith in Congress? No. But I have every faith. You know what it is, Lou? It's the old hula hoop theory, which I've talked about many times on the show, but I love this theory. But you take a hula hoop out, you throw it at the end of your driveway, you stand in the middle of it, you look around. You make everything better that you can see, and you are changing the world. Point being, at the end of your driveway, you can see your neighborhood. You can think about your schools. You're going to make your schools better. You're going to make your street better. You're going to make your neighborhood better. You're going to take care of your house. Your neighbors are going to take care of their house. You're going to worry about each other. Take care of your neighborhoods, and the rest of it will start to take care of itself.
The change is within all of us, not in our political leaders. I mean, look, there are some good ones out there, but the point is that each individual, you, me, everybody sitting in that room with you, my family, like you said, the person down the street, we're the ones that are going to make the change. We're the ones that are going to sit together and say, all right, enough is enough, and we need to keep our eyes open. We need to protect each other. We need to be kind to each other, and we need to love each other. It's really, love trounces everything else, and we all have to have it for each other and realize, as you mentioned earlier, we all want the same things. We want to live our lives. We want to be happy. We want to raise a family. We want to look at the people around us and have them be happy. But we need to do it. And it starts by being positive and being kind and being respectful and understanding.
6-year-old texter, respect is the key on all sides and all ages. Mary from Roselle, and those texts come in, you know, by the hundreds on a day like this. And unfortunately, I can say on a day like this because we've had days like mm-hmm. this before, but this is a very unique day as well. And for anybody who's listening and thinking that somehow we're putting the lives of five cops as of higher value than the 50 that were shot over the 4th of July weekend around Chicago, that's absolutely untrue as well. We have an imbalance in the way we report things, but there is a symbolic nature to the death of a cop who goes to work to protect everybody else that's important to discuss. So nobody's life is more important than anybody other's life. But if we live in a world where it's okay to start sniping cops and we don't do something about it, then we have failed on every level.
Right, right. There needs to be law and there needs to be order for everyone. And it starts with, you know, the respect of the authority, people that are in authority positions. But again, everyone's life matters, no matter what color your skin happens to be.
So you get up this morning and you're a black kid and you just want to do the right thing and go to school or go to work or whatever. I hope your mom and dad are telling you this, your grandparents, whatever. Here's what I would say as a parent. I'd say you see a cop, you look him in the eyes, you smile, you shake his hand, you say thank you. If you're a cop, you do what you do every day. You get up, you go to work, and thank you for doing the job you do. And you say goodbye to your family, you kiss them goodbye, but it's no different than yesterday, right? You don't know if you're coming home, but we sure hope you are, and God bless every one of you. But you see a black kid on the street, you break down that wall too, and you do what so many cops have done that I see. There's pictures online last night of cops taking pictures with the protesters of Black Lives Matter. Big smiley pictures an hour before all this shooting took place. Everybody to their core has decency in them until they don't. And the cowards that killed these cops last night, they'll be dealt with. They'll be caught, they'll be brought to justice, and they'll deal with God down the road in my set of views. It's just very sad. It's sad, it's depressing, it's all of that. So do you mind if I change subjects awkwardly here?
No, go right ahead.
You got a show tomorrow?
I do. I do. We're on 7 to 10 tomorrow morning. We have an interesting Noodaloo 2 that if you like to entertain outside and you're worried about, I'm just going to say if you like to entertain outside, this is something that's quite useful, invented by a local person here in the western suburbs, and that will be featured at 7:50 in the morning. So,
and
you got for you wine drinkers.
Okay, there you go. And a beautiful summer weekend in Chicago. A nice glass of wine. That's great. And Andre and I were talking about the TV show yesterday. How far in advance do you guys shoot the TV show generally? Are they 3 weeks out, 4 weeks out?
It's usually about 6 weeks out. We're shooting all throughout the country, all at different times. Then the pieces and parts get together. And so I'll typically go to a location where we'll do what's called the wraps, you know, the welcome back, here we go. And we'll do a couple of shows at a time at that point. And then Andrea, who contributes, will be doing a feature so that we kind of know what the map is of everything that's happening. And so we reference all of that stuff. But sometimes, you know, the features are things that I don't see yet. I know the concept, but I haven't seen them or they haven't shot them. But they're about 6 weeks. This is our 10th year. It's our 10th season.
How about that?
10 years.
Yeah.
10 happy years. Anniversary.
Yeah, so thank you. So it's really quite amazing because the guy that I partnered with out of New York, a friend of mine, now a dear friend of mine, Frank DeGioia, when we started this thing, we just never knew what would happen, how far it would go. And we did this all on our own in the sense that we're a true independent. We don't have a big distributorship, you know, like Oprah had King World or anything like that. We do all the selling. We do all the station affiliation. And our friend who was very kind to us, who now runs Tribune, Larry Wirt, was
fine man, good dancer.
He's a terrific dancer, but he was the one that gave us a shot back when he was on NBC 5 and gave us the opportunity to do 13 local episodes in Chicago just to see if it would work. And so I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And, it's amazing. 10 years. It's, it's been a fun ride.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary to you. And the TV show's on. Check your local listings on Channel 9 both Saturday and Sunday.
Saturdays at 4, Sundays at 10:30 in the morning on Channel 9. All and right. Then it reruns on CLTV quite a bit.
Still think you should check your local listings. Just
yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Feel strongly about
sure.
that.
Okay.
DVR right,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, we're out of time, but let me ask you one quick question because it came up several times this week. Lawns, LAWNS. We got a ton of rain Wednesday night. We got some more rain last night. Is that enough, or should people still water?
No, don't water.
Don't water.
This is great because it was a really good soaking, and so now what we want to do is let that absorb into the ground, and we want your roots to grow. Overwatering causes weak lawns, and so let this go. I would almost say don't even touch it for a week and let it really soak in, and it's going to draw those roots down. It's going to make your lawn healthier. You can do a little, you know, my favorite stuff is Milorganite, which is all natural. You can go ahead and sprinkle some of that on the lawn. It'll green up really. It loves damp soil, and you'll see great results. And so go ahead and buy a couple bags of that, sprinkle it all over the lawn. You'll be amazed. You can put that in the garden, too.
All right, buddy. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you.
Hey, take care.
That's Lou Manfredini. It is 6:32. The Steve Cochran Show continues. We'll get the big story next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Woo! Woo!
Ow!
Love that money.
Money. 6:42. Elise Glink's been doing a nice job filling in for Bertrand all week in the noon hour. And today, you can apparently ask her anything about money. Is that right, Elise? People can ask anything about money today?
Yep, that's about it.
All right, so that's the whole show?
Well, it's only the second half of the show. We've got some good guests, like we always do. We're doing some, I don't know, we're just going to, like, hang like you and I do.
All right, good, 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 good. But you do a nice job when you're filling in. This was obviously kind of a lame plug by you and I. But having said that,
that's all right.
I listened to the
show. There's a lot of other stuff going on today.
Yeah, there is.
I wanted to sort of tell you, last week I was in Dallas, and I was staying in downtown Dallas. We were there for my younger son, Michael's, the volleyball nationals were there, the boys' volleyball nationals, which is kind of like Junior Olympics. And so we stayed at the Dallas Marriott City Center, and we walked from there to the convention center every day. It was like 1.2 miles, and we were right in downtown at this mall, this big mall that's part of the hotel. And we walked right through where the killings happened last night. And we were walking at about the same time a week ago. And it's like 100 degrees in Dallas right now. This is just this week. You know, sometimes they talk in Chicago about how when the weather gets super hot in the summer, tempers get hot, people are short-tempered, they don't have enough air conditioning. Like, you know, there's just, they're out. And it sounds like it was just terrifying to me to watch the news last night, realizing that Sam and I and the boys and all of their volleyball people were walking through those particular streets. And I just had such a vivid moment of recollection.
It's got to be eerie, right? And I heard you talking about this yesterday. Downtown Dallas, from a business standpoint, seems kind of vacant. And now, with what's going on, it's a giant crime scene this morning. There's more people on the street, but they're all cops. And, you know, it's got to look like 1963 with new cars.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrifying. It's what's interesting about downtown Dallas, just from a real estate point of view, is you feel like you're walking through all the decades of both good and bad architecture from starting in, like, the 50s. So you've got buildings down there from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, aughts, 90s, aughts, and you're looking at them all and the way that buildings have been developed. And what they're doing is what we have been doing here in Chicago for the last 15, 20 years. They're trying to take these old buildings and redo them and make them into tech centers. And so they built this light rail system in the downtown where you can hop on, hop off. It's kind of, you get an app for it, you pay on the app. Nobody's around there taking tickets. So a lot of people are on there who are just kind of hangers-on in the neighborhood, which can be a little creepy from a visitor perspective if you're not used to it. But you kind of have this weird, insular little downtown with not a lot happening, but a lot that they're trying to do. And it just speaks to really the divisions that we see, you know, both with race and economically in this country. It's fascinating. and scary.
But you know, it's the ultimate truth about any problem, right? Whether it's financial or anything else, there's an immediate, a midterm, and a long term solution. And the long term solution is the most frustrating because it takes the longest to get there. But the communities need to be better at taking care of the kids in the communities that have the most troubles, no matter where they are. But in the short term, we've got to find a way to provide more jobs for more people so they can have better lives and provide more opportunity for the people closest to them.
Well, what's happening in Dallas, which is speaks to this point exactly, and this was kind of interesting economically, is that the center of employment used to be in downtown Dallas, right? So you have these big buildings, and yet all of the new headquarters are moving out of the city center to a town called Plano, which is where the better school districts are, where the brand new fancy buildings are. And so home prices in Plano, which is a little bit outside of the downtown, has exploded. Like, home values are exploding and the buildings are exploding. And unlike Chicago, which has so much infrastructure, meaning we've got great highways that go downtown. I know there's a lot of traffic, but we also have Metra. I took Metra yesterday into the city to do the show. We have other ways to get around town on public transportation that take you out to the far reaches of our suburban lives, right? You can go to Waukegan on the Metra, and you can commute in. Dallas doesn't have that. And so when all these jobs move out, all these good, high-paying jobs move out of the city center to Plano and to other neighborhoods in that area, it really takes opportunities away from people who are locked into the city center. And it's very different from what we have up here and why I think our downtown has just really boomed over the last 5 or 7 years. The infrastructure, the schools, it all matters.
Yeah, and I'm surprised to hear you say that yesterday as well, that there is such a lack of a cohesive mass transit system in a city that size. All right, we're going to run. We'll hear you this afternoon. It's Ask Elise Anything, preferably about money.
You got it.
It's an AMA. It's Ask Her Anything starting at noon today. She fills in for Steve Bertrand, and people go to thinklink.com.
That's it.
All right, 647. Mary will do the traffic here. We come back. The fringe is the loudest this morning in the wake of this travesty in Dallas where 11 cops were shot and 5 are dead. But the fringe makes it worse. So, well, I'll highlight a few of the worst people, including a few texting listeners this morning. Everybody take a breath.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
What we do know is that there has been a vicious, calculated, and despicable attack on law enforcement. Police in Dallas were on duty doing their jobs, keeping people safe during peaceful protests.
And Jim Ryan is in Dallas for ABC News, as usual. And today, Jim, let's kind of reset this story. What can you tell us about what happened, when it happened, and where we are now?
Yeah, in Dallas and in several other cities, as you know, and I think in Chicago even, there was a protest planned, a demonstration staged by Black Lives Matter. The organizers here in Dallas had been meeting with the police. They have a pretty good relationship that they developed over the last couple of years to coordinate this kind of protest. The mayor, the police chief, they encourage this sort of demonstration and this kind of protest, and they consider it a kind of a civic duty to get out and speak your mind. So last night, this demonstration was just winding down. There was a march going on through downtown and people carrying signs and chanting. And just before this, there were Twitter images of Dallas police officers arm in arm with some of the demonstrators, protesters holding signs that said, "No justice, no peace." So there's a friendly relationship there. At 9 o'clock, that's when the first shots rang out, explosive gunshots coming from above. And we now know that there were at least two snipers up in high-rise buildings, including a parking garage, firing down into the crowd, specifically targeting police and doing so with amazing accuracy. 12 police officers were shot. 5 of them were killed. Others are still being treated this morning. One civilian also was hurt. She was hit in the leg as she jumped on top of her kids to try to spare them from the bullets.
And as of this morning, we know we've got a press conference coming up from the city in 40 minutes or so. But I'm sure there's a million theories floating around. But do we know that one of the suspects was killed last night, or was that parking garage standoff somebody else entirely?
Well, the mayor said that just a short time ago on Good Morning America that that one suspect had died. We don't know whether it was a suicide or whether he was killed by police, but it's thought that he was still firing rounds at the officers who were there trying to negotiate with him. He also said ominously during that, those negotiations, or during the conversation, that explosives had been planted in that parking garage and perhaps in other buildings as well. A search by Dallas police and the ATF has turned up nothing. Still, a large section of downtown Dallas is essentially closed off because it's a crime scene. You've got bullet holes and shell casings and a lot for investigators to look at.
Jim, do we know anything yet about this particular gunman, or are they they're still looking for a second, correct?
Well, they have three people in custody who are thought to be connected, and the one who apparently has died. Now, could there be others? Perhaps. I think that's what we hope to learn with this briefing coming up just a short time from now.
Nobody's taking any credit for this, right? Because one of the concerns was this sort of some sort of domestic terrorist act, which usually was using the Black Lives Matter protest as cover.
You're right. Nobody has claimed responsibility in any way for this.
All right, Jim, thanks. I know you're busy, and we appreciate you jumping on.
Thanks.
It's Jim Ryan from ABC News. We'll check in with Alex Stone later as well from ABC. So that gives you kind of a synopsis of what happened to this point. Here's how you make things worse. Assume your position on the fringes is the correct position. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, the president didn't help. The president made a speech yesterday citing police violence against the African-Americans in particular, without really going the full story. Now, today, the statement he followed up with was terrific, and I refuse to believe that President Obama is to blame for this kind of insanity. Yeah. The governor of Minnesota made it worse yesterday. Oh. The governor of Minnesota is a guy named Mark Dayton, who stood up at a press conference and said that he believes that if, what was his name again? Philando Castile. If Philando Castile were white, he wouldn't be dead. That's the governor of the state of Minnesota. Doesn't help.
I couldn't believe Mark Dayton, the Minnesota governor. I couldn't believe when he said that.
Yeah, so outrageous. I think we have the clip. This is from his press conference.
Would this have happened if those passengers, the driver and the passengers, were white? I don't think it would have. So I'm forced to confront, and I think all of us in Minnesota are forced to confront, that this kind of racism exists, and that it's incumbent upon all of us to vow that we're going to do whatever we can to see that it doesn't happen, it doesn't continue to happen.
Here's what is outrageous about that statement. You have no investigation in any sort of complete detail at that point, and you've now thrown all of the cops under the bus.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous for the governor of the state of Minnesota to stand up and say something.
Officers like who still have to patrol and go out and do their job every single day, in the light of this now, too.
It's ridiculous. Oh, Congress, by the way, is making it worse as well, because Congress has decided to reopen the Hillary Clinton email situation, or I should say the State Department has. Congress yesterday spent hours and hours and hours taking James Comey, the head of the FBI, off of his normal duty, and he's got plenty to discuss with Congress, all trying to make points for their own reelection campaigns as to why Hillary Clinton wouldn't be charged. Most of them in Congress not even understanding how charges are brought and that Comey doesn't have the power to prosecute.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an embarrassment. So Congress is making it worse. But I got to be honest with you, there's a few of you listening to the show this morning. You're not making it better. I'm telling you, the idea that, well, let me just read a couple of these to you. I'll try to do these with minimal judgment, but you know me, I judge. Today you lost a longtime listener and potential sponsor, so go ahead and keep advocating for Black Lives. They shoot the hell out of each other and then they ask for help. They shoot the hell out of each other and then ask for help. Because of the reactionary segments by your station and so many other media outlets, five officers in Dallas are dead today. So go ahead and peddle your wares and sit on your butts and keep talking about how Black Lives Matter. And at the end of the day, see how many listeners you actually have money to spend with your sponsors remain and how many sponsors remain. I'd like to tell you, sir, your money's not welcome here. Because that kind of racism I wouldn't advocate, I wouldn't support, and I wouldn't in any way justify. And I think you really need a long look in the mirror. Now, let's talk about the flip side of this story for a second. When Michael Brown in Ferguson was shot, for days the media reported that a child without a weapon was shot in the back. Michael Brown had been menacing a local store owner, walked down the street, ignored the police officer trying to get him to walk to get out of the center of the street, and then rushed the police officer and tried to take his gun. Those aren't opinions. Those are facts. Michael Brown was then shot, and he died. He was not carrying a weapon at the time, but he was an absolute threat to the officer who was trying to get him to behave like a normal citizen. This, of course, after he had committed a crime.
He'd robbed the store.
He menaced and robbed the store, right. Walked out with, I don't know, food or something. So the fact is, there are way too many circumstances where the media jumps to a conclusion and then pounds it into the ground over and over again. And we live in the age of advocates for particular sides. And when you get young, attractive African-American advocates to go on TV and spout, frankly, insane thoughts because they don't know the facts of a case either, they can fire up a community that's not necessarily fired up as well. There's plenty of blame to go around. Plenty of blame. All lives matter from the 630, from the 262. It's not ridiculous, Steve. Look at the stats of shooting blacks by police. I'm white, by the way. Here's the deal. I'm not advocating that any cop shoots a kid, white, black, green, or another adult. And every cop that goes to work never, ever, ever wants to fire their gun. Every cop will tell you the worst thing for police are bad cops, because bad cops make good cops' jobs 100 times worse. But you know what we need? Here's what we need today. We need the police population and police leadership around the country to stand up and say, we are doing everything within our power to root out the trouble in our departments.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
7:10 in the morning, the mayor of Dallas' latest statement says 12 officers were shot and 2 civilians. Will be a City of Dallas officials update coming up at 7:30 or as close to that as possible. A completely peaceful, wasn't even largely peaceful, completely peaceful Black Lives Matter protest last night in Dallas, organized by and in the Black Lives Matter organization, but also encouraged by the City of Dallas and the police department. Again, your right to protest is supported and defended. And then at the end of this, shots rang out from 2 cowards, at least 2. Snipers, and the result is 5 dead cops and 12 who were shot. It's absolutely, it's appalling. It's appalling on every level. At 7:10, there's another story I want to pick up on in just a second, but just a couple more of your texts. 630, Steve, I believe you're wrong about what President Obama said yesterday. He's stating what exists, and so is the governor of Minnesota who told the truth. They did not make things worse. There are too many white people who are afraid of all blacks. The violence was unfortunate in Dallas. As you know, most of the protests have been peaceful. Well, the violence is a little more than unfortunate. The violence is absolutely a travesty. We've got 5 people who are dead, whose job it is to protect others, and that's what they were doing, protecting the right to protest that night. I want to make something clear for those of you who only hear what you want to hear and then you stop listening. What I said was President Obama's statement yesterday didn't help. What I said was the mayor of Minnesota's statement that if the man in the vehicle in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, had not been black, he'd be alive, is ridiculous. You have a responsibility in the highest levels of leadership, whether it's the White House or a governor's mansion, to support those who are investigating any crime. And if it's found to be true that the cop in Falcon Heights was a murderer, if it's found to be true that the cops in Baton Rouge were a murderer, guess what? We don't know because we saw a video. CNN doesn't know. We don't know. So how about you take a step back and everybody take a breath and let's figure out exactly what happened. But we don't do that, do we? 312, when did a black cop shoot a white person during a traffic stop? The governor said what everyone is thinking. Well, it does happen. Statistically, cops kill more white people than black people. The population is necessarily larger. But that's a statistical fact. And there was a case in 2014 that was mildly reported. Look, none of this helps. None of this discussion does anything about what happened in Dallas last night. Are there racist cops? Yes. Are there racist black people? Yes. What you need to do is get up this morning and realize the majority of cops, the vast majority of cops, are trying to do the right thing. The vast majority of those protesters around the country for Black Lives Matter are trying to do the right thing. We want racist cops off police forces. We want violence out of neighborhoods. We want people to stop shooting each other. Can I get a amen on that? Come on. How is that hard to understand?
It's baffling that just it continues to happen. And, you know, we were all saying in here this morning before the show even started that maybe this will be the time that something happens with regard to, I don't know if it's stricter gun laws. I don't know what it is anymore. But I don't know if that's even going to happen.
Yeah, we're not going to sit here and pretend we have the answer to this monumental societal problem. But we're going to tell you the truth. And the truth is fringe views here don't help.
Right.
And you've said it a million times, Steve. It's not going to be any one incident. It's going to be up to the people to eventually vote in people who have the gun laws that most people represent.
You have to have people who represent the people in their will, and you have to have people with courage that are going to do that. And the police need to speak out loudly and proudly about the good cops that are doing their job and what they're doing to get rid of the bad cops. And black folks in every community, you need to talk about the fact that Black Lives Matter isn't about violence and stop this now.
I just spoke to Reverend Greg Livingston, who's going to join us actually in the 9 o'clock hour, and he organizes many of the protests
right.
that we have in Chicago and preaches peace. And he literally just said, he's looking forward to talking to you, Steve. He said, we all have to come together. You know, this is about peace. This is about stopping the violence, not provoking or adding to the problem.
If you get up this morning and you think cops are hunting kids, or if you get up in this morning and you think all black kids are shooting each other and that's what they do, you're in the same group. You're both racist, narrow-minded bigots in your views, and you're not helping.
Amen to that, too.
7:15. Traffic update in just a second. And then I want to, we have guests that are scheduled this morning. And I know it's a little awkward transitionally, but we have guests that are scheduled this morning that I wanted to keep on the schedule because we have other stuff we want to talk about as well. One of the things is there's a recommitment for troops in Afghanistan that is a story that didn't get a lot of attention this week because so much other stuff is going on. But Ivan Eland is standing by, who knows from world affairs and military affairs around the globe. You may have seen his post in the Huffington Post, amongst other places, who I want to talk to about it and what his thoughts are and whether or not we ought to be keeping people in Afghanistan. My concern about Afghanistan is because unless folks in Afghanistan actually want to save themselves and stop their tribal violence that goes back centuries, I don't know if it's making any difference that we're there or not. 7:20, Steve Cochran Show, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, show number 687 at Cochran Show on Twitter, facebook.com/Steve Cochran Show, texters and phone calls at 312-981-7200. At 7:20, we're anticipating a briefing from the city of Dallas right around 7:30. Andrea will make it her big story then. In the meantime, President Obama this week talked about keeping troops in Afghanistan. And you can read Ivan Eland all over the place, including on Twitter, at Ivan_Eland. He's an American defense analyst and author, and you see him in the Huffington Post, among other places, senior fellow and director of the Center on Peace and Liberty at the Independent Institute. And Ivan, thanks for hanging on. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I am curious about your thoughts about keeping troops in Afghanistan, and, well, I don't think we should give up on anybody. My concern is as soon as we leave, whenever we leave, the old, centuries-old tribal violence returns.
Yeah, I think you're actually seeing that now. We dress it up as the Taliban, but the most of the Taliban is of one ethnic group, Pashtuns, and they don't like the Uzbeks and the Tajiks and the Hazaras. And so, yes, it's been a country that has been unsubduable, if that's a word. The British tried it three times in the 1800s and early 1900s. The Soviets tried it recently in the 1980s. And, of course, the U.S. Went in there knowing all this. And I think where we made the mistake of taking – it was fine to take out the Taliban after 9/11, but I think we turned it into a military social work project to, you know, rehabilitate the country and bring democracy – or whatever. And of course, this is a country that's xenophobic. They don't like foreigners, particularly foreigners that come with guns. And also, they don't, they've never been, had a strong central government. It's always been very decentralized. And of course, we're trying to put in a stronger central government, and they're resisting that.
Well, one of the things that always struck me since we learned of this fact is without a centralized system to collect taxes in Afghanistan, you're never going to be able to pay for anything, and it's impossible to develop a civilized society where everybody contributes.
Right. Taxation, as we found out, was very important in the new government in, that we had in this country, the federal government, the Constitutional Convention in 1787. Part of the reason for that was to centralize enough so that you could collect, the national government could collect taxes, because during the Revolution, the Articles of Confederation, they couldn't raise money to support the Continental Army, and they had trouble doing that, and the states wouldn't contribute. So you have the same problem in Afghanistan. Taxation is the power to raise money to do things, and the central government is basically dependent, 90% of it is dependent on U.S. aid. So you know, we can't keep our finger in the dike forever, and we've been trying to train up the forces there for 14 years. And the problem that we have is we can train the forces, but then a lot of them leave or get killed or whatever. And so we have, you know, as high as 50% attrition rates, and you just can't keep up that for very long.
Does it
have? And unfortunately, we've just recommitted to do it indefinitely.
And does it come down to the fact that you literally can't help those who don't want to help themselves? And I'm not trying to be trite in any way, shape, or form, but if their definition of helping themselves is us going away, you can't unspend a dollar we've already spent, but we can certainly stop risking American lives there.
Yeah, and we have lost 30-some lives since the combat mission officially ended in 2014. Of course, we're still fighting there. We don't call it combat, but we call it something else, which is kind of disingenuous. But the troops are still, and Obama has just opened up the rules of engagement so that the U.S. will probably see U.S. casualties increase again a little bit. But your larger question is, a lot of these places, the reason that we're there because they're unstable in the first place, and the reason they're unstable is because they're sort of artificial countries. Afghanistan is an artificial country. Iraq is an artificial country. Libya is an artificial country. All these countries that we've gone into recently are the political boundaries don't square with the ethnic or sectarian boundaries. And I wrote a book recently called The Failure of Counterinsurgency, and that's what these wars are, counterinsurgency. Vietnam was one too. You're fighting insurgents or guerrillas. And it's very tough, even for the most powerful military in the world, to win in these places, because you're basically trying to remodel the country. You're trying to remodel the culture, the political culture, the social culture, and you just can't do it with the military. The military is not supposed to be a social work agency. It's supposed to fight other militaries, and they're really not fighting other militaries. They're fighting guerrillas that blend back into the countryside, and you can be stuck in these places for forever. And the problem with America doing this, unlike the British Empire, was the British Empire, they were overtly imperial. They went to stay as long as it took, and we don't like to do that. We like to go and have a finite commitment of resources,
right?
And
doesn't work that way
and everything else, and so we're just unsuited to it.
Yeah, and by the way, one of the major arguments, I'll let you go on this, but one of the major arguments is, well, if we leave, we create a breeding ground for terrorists, and they'll come here and they'll come after us. The fact of the matter is, again, you don't even have to go back a generation to know history here, and that is, at one point, we were helping arm bin Laden and others before we knew who bin Laden and others would turn out to be. In other words, we don't buy loyalty by staying longer.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of unintended consequences to these things. We've seen it in Libya, even after the disaster in Iraq. Hillary Clinton and Obama went into Libya and did the same thing. They toppled the dictator, and now we have chaos. So what did they think was going to happen? And I think, you know, it's just there's a lot of unintended consequences to these things, and we need to be more careful about, you know, when we go in there. As for the sanctuary, well, we've got sanctuaries in Yemen, Somalia, Pakistan. We created the sanctuary in Pakistan by destabilizing Afghanistan next door. So we've created some of these problems ourselves. And I think, you know, basically, with drones, we could run a standoff campaign if that's the way you want to go. We don't have to be in Afghanistan. This Afghanistan, we've gone to a new model with the drone wars now. And Afghanistan's kind of the old model where we're still bogged down on the ground. So I think you can hunt terrorists if you want. My theory is that if you're hunting terrorists in public, you're probably creating more terrorists. And I think we need to be more in the shadows of special forces, CIA, that sort of thing. The type of thing that we did with the bin Laden raid.
Ivan Elin, nicely done by you, as always, independent.org, regularly in the Huffington Post, and on social media, Ivan_Eland, E-L-A-N-D. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
728, we'll come back, pick up the news conference in Dallas when it starts on 720 WGN. Former Governor Pat Quinn in studio. We were going to talk, and we will talk, about the petition drive you have started, but obviously being in a petition, or a position, I should say, of leadership when the worst happens is a pretty, well, it's a pretty difficult day. I'm sure you can feel for the mayor in particular, Dallas, right?
Yeah, and the police chief, too. David Brown, the police chief, I thought at the press conference really did a wonderful job, and it's important all of us as the family of America come together and help the families in Dallas who lost their heroic husbands and fathers, defending others. And it was also impressive, I thought, Steve, that those who were in the square exercising their rights to speak came together with the police officers. Yep. And that's really our country at its best.
So in a case like this, you learn things when you learn them. There was a thought overnight that this was a coordinated attack, and the Black Lives Matter protest may have been used as cover. What David Brown, the police chief, just said was that this particular suspect who ended up being killed by a remote bomb the police had to use to take him out before he hurt others, this suspect was saying he was mad about the two incidents this week, and he wanted to kill as many white people and as many cops as he possibly could. That means what it means. It doesn't tie the rest of it in, but certainly this goes to the large degree of rhetoric that goes on now that amps up the hate, that amps up the fringe elements that create these kind of things. And words matter, right?
Yeah, if you have a deranged shooter, sniper, from a high position trying to shoot human beings, there's no, you have to apprehend that person or do whatever necessary to stop them, and that's what they had to do in Dallas. And, you know, this happened obviously elsewhere in our country. When I was governor, we had the Newtown parents come to Springfield and stay at the mansion overnight and then speak to our legislators about the dangers of high-capacity assault weapons with these high-capacity magazines. And, you know, we need to take a look at that. Assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines are weapons of war, and to see those weapons used on civilians and human beings in our own cities across America, used against school children in first grade, yeah, it's obviously something our country we have to deal with.
And the thing is, and Andre, you and I have talked about this a million times, mm-hmm. The thing is, you get so overwhelmed. It's such a weighty problem. How do you solve all of it? You know, we're talking about difficulties between police and citizens, difficulties between races, difficulties when it comes to gun laws, all of it. And people get bogged down. And of course, we have this ridiculous campaign. People get bogged down and go, well, what do we fix first? Here's the deal. Just do one thing. Just take a step. Do one thing. Just do something. Don't just go, there's too much. I can't do anything. Do something. Whatever that something is that you have influence over, and in our case, in most of our cases, it's demanding more from the people we elect.
Yeah, well, I would say this. There were real heroes last night in Dallas, police officers who shielded civilians from the sniper fire, and some of them lost their lives. Five police officers died doing their duty, and you know, we should pray for their immortal souls and their families. And any victim of violence, it's very important that the family of America, we're all part of that, understand, you know, that violence hurts our society in innumerable ways and hurts families. Right here in Chicago, we had children in Englewood being shot. You know, that's not acceptable.
My of course not.
Mom and dad were born in Englewood 100 years ago, and it's important to make sure that public safety comes first.
I hope we can stick around for a segment, because yeah, I want to talk about what you've been busy doing since you left office. And continue with Governor Quinn here in a few moments. Dean is off today, but frankly, the show business news is not all that interesting to us because we need to talk about what's going on in Dallas and in the rest of the world and here in Chicago. Back with that after the news on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio.
WGN Chicago.
720 WGN.
810, Governor Quinn is here, was scheduled to appear prior to the travesty in Dallas last night. We thank you for still coming in, because we want to talk to you about this petition drive you're doing, as well as get your thoughts on Dallas that you shared with us a few moments ago. So you are generating petition signatures, for people that don't know, for what?
Well, we're passing petitions here in Chicago to put a term limit on the mayor and also to elect a consumer advocate for taxpayers. They're two separate referendums, Steve. And in order to put them on the ballot, we have to get 100,000 signatures. And especially with the property tax bills arriving this week, I think it underlines the importance of changing the structure of government in Chicago. And if you look around the country, of the 10 largest cities in America, 9 out of 10 have term limits on the mayor. Only Chicago doesn't. And we want to give voters a chance to vote on that and have a chance of the same thing as they have for president, two-term limit. And I think what it does is it makes sure that there's fresh ideas and fresh people on a regular basis running the city.
And the consumer advocate side, is this similar to the Cub initiative from years ago?
Yeah, you know, in 1982, I got a referendum on the Chicago ballot to set up the Citizen Utility Board. That's how it came about, through referendum, really. And you know, we need a consumer advocate for issues beyond utilities. And under this proposal, there would be a citywide election to elect someone who's a consumer advocate on issues, everything from insurance or cable TV abuses or anything that happens that harms everyday people, but also taxpayers. You know, right now the system isn't very fair. It's not based on ability to pay. And we need a consumer advocate for taxpayers to take on unfairness in the property tax system. In particular, particularly in Chicago, the increases in the property tax have really harmed everyday folks who are homeowners who are living from check to check every month.
I think people were surprised to learn that there wasn't already a consumer advocate out there. I mean, things on bottled water taxes, and we just learned the other day that the tampon tax was recently revealed. Some of these crazy taxes that are out there, the people aren't aware that they're even being taxed.
That's exactly right, Andrea, and I think it's important to have a person that the voters elect, the taxpayers elect. They have this in New York already. They call it public advocate there, but for 25 years, they've had a person elected by the voters who fights for taxpayers on a daily basis. That's their number one job.
How would it work, though? Is it because I don't want to call it a lobbying position, but how would it work in regards to changing things?
Well, we have a Department of Consumer Services in Chicago. This elected official would take over that department. Right now, the person who leads it is an appointee of the mayor, and I don't think they're very strong. And I think you need a strong voice for taxpayers and consumers. So they would run a department that protects consumers and regulates anything that might harm them. And then also, we don't have a Department of Environment in the city of Chicago anymore. We used to. And you need to fight for things like clean water. Look at what happened in Flint, Michigan. You need to have a watchdog who really looks out for taxpayers on a regular basis. The system oftentimes is weighted against an average citizen, and powerful economic interests oftentimes get their way. So, you know, if anybody's interested, our phone number is 773-999-2016, area code 773. And this just began a couple weeks ago. The whole idea of democracy, which we celebrated on the 4th of July, is the voters call the shots. The voters are in charge, not the insiders or the incumbents. And putting a term limit on the mayor and having an elected consumer advocate allows voters in Chicago to vote on a binding referendum, two binding referendums, that will make things better.
And people want to know why mayor.
Well, the mayor is the one who's the boss of Chicago and has been for a long time. And
would you run for mayor?
No, I'm not too interested in that.
Would you close?
I was already governor of Illinois.
Would you close the door on the idea?
You know, the future will take care of itself. I'm more interested.
So that sounds like never say never to me.
But I'm going back to where I started. 40 years ago, I was at the station. We were doing petition drives for referendums. So ended advance pay for legislators in Springfield for 100 years. They used to get their whole pay in advance.
I support the idea. But I also support the idea for term limits in Springfield. Are you for
that? Oh, I'm for that, Matter of fact, in 1994, we gathered signatures, half a million signatures, to try and put term limits on the Speaker of the House and the legislators. And
how about the governor?
Well, you had to do it in a separate effort.
But I mean, do you support that?
I support it for governor, for sure. But, you know, back then, the Supreme Court said the only way to get term limits on legislators was for the legislators to put it on the ballot. I thought that was a bad decision. We lost 4-3 in that case. But the separate part of the Constitution, in municipalities like ours in Chicago, voters can put a binding referendum for a term limit on the mayor. And 20 cities in Illinois have already done this, like Springfield and Naperville. Naperville and Des Plaines, Oak Lawn. And so, you know, the whole idea of people passing petitions and making the law themselves.
And being a part of the process.
Exactly. The mayor can't change this. If we get it on the ballot and the people vote for it, the mayor of Chicago has to accept the judgment of the people.
I think that there needs to be term limits across the board. I'm not a supporter of lifetime appointments to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. I think there should be term limits for all major positions of power where you have control over people's money and their lives.
When you look at the beginning of our country, you know, King George III in England was on the throne for 59 years.
Yeah.
And so the founding fathers were very suspicious of someone being in the same office for too long. And so Ben Franklin and Thomas Jefferson and George Washington self-limited his terms to two terms as
right.
president. That was a great precedent. He understood we couldn't have a monarchy. We have democracy. And, you know, in this very sad day where we lost the lives of heroic police officers and other folks across America who've lost their lives through violence that was unjustified, you know, I think it's as a family, the people of our state and people of America have to really understand how precious democracy is. It's a God-given gift. And when things go wrong, we've got to come together as a family and use the tools of democracy to straighten things out. You know, at our church the other day, we sang America the Beautiful. And in that song, you know, to mend thine every flaw. We're not perfect. You know, we're trying to perfect our union. And today, I think, is a good day for all of us to renew our vow to help each other.
I couldn't agree more. And if people want to get involved and sign the petition, where do they do it next or where can they do it?
Yeah, we have a website. It's called takechargechicago.org is our website. And our phone number, 773-999-2016. And we can change Chicago, reform Chicago, one petition signature at a time. And it's done by the people in the best traditions of American democracy.
All right. So we're going to term limit Madigan. We're going to term limit Rauner. And we're going to term limit everybody in charge. And we're going to fix the state.
I think, you know, it'd be interesting if we had a whole new cast of folks coming in, you know, in city government
fresh
or
blood.
Anywhere else. Yeah, well, that's the whole idea. The founding fathers said it was rotation of office. No one should serve too long in the same office, at least in consecutive terms. And I think a two-term limit, we have it for president. Why not do it for the mayor of Chicago?
Yeah.
You dealt with a lot of stuff, let's say, when you were governor. Did you ever see anything this crazy? Did you ever think this budget would take almost a year to be signed? And it's not even a full budget.
Yeah, I was governor for 6 years, and yeah. It was an honor to be there. And we did six budgets, full budgets, not half-year budgets.
On time?
Yeah,
I believe,
yeah, we got
yeah.
it done. Uh-huh. Sometimes it went overtime. And even during the fiscal year, you had to work a little bit to perfect it. But, you know, the bottom line is the number one job, as Jim Edgar has said, he was governor when I was state treasurer, and I was governor after him. You're the quarterback of the state, and you got to get a budget done, full budget, that's fair and doesn't
hurt
people.
It is
the
base. Fundamental job
right.
of everybody in Springfield, and it's a flat joke that it can't get done. And this is Madigan's fault, this is Cullerton's fault, this is Redonio's fault, this is Durkin's fault, this is Rauner's fault. Figure it out.
Yeah, the bottom line is the people come first, you know, and anybody who's an office holder, whatever your political party, you got to deliver. You know, that's what QBs do. Quarterbacks
right.
got to get you into the end zone and hopefully get a good outcome. But, you know, what we saw today, so important that we invest in public safety. You know, who
are we doing that enough? When you talk to cops, there's a morale problem that grows, and especially on days like this.
Well, you know,
how do cops feel?
Well, you know, I got money for training classes for state police. We had to do that in the budget. We had to pay for that, obviously. You have to get revenue for that. But you have to have, as state policemen retire, you got to have classes to teach new police,
right.
state policemen
Cost money.
To come along. Yeah, but that's the price of our democracy, to have safety.
Yep.
You can't have people in the marketplace arguing ideas if you don't have safety. And, you know, what we saw yesterday were those police officers shielding those who were in the arena exercising their rights. It's very, very important that we honor all of those, everyone who's participating in our democracy.
You going to run again?
Well, I don't know about that. That's the future. In the past, I have run for
governor. As of today, it's a maybe?
Today, it's petition passing. I really enjoy this.
I've
collected over 3,000 names myself.
But you
in the
and
best
I,
traditions
you,
of Steve Cochran.
You and I have known each other for a long time. You know you're not going to get out of here with that answer. Yeah. Is it possible you're going to run again?
You never know. Yeah.
Okay.
But I tell you one thing. We didn't have the Citizen Utility Board without a referendum.
That's true.
Without people putting it on the ballot.
True.
And so we're going to put term limits on the mayor of Chicago.
I remember you having a press conference probably every other week with Citizen Utility Board.
We had to do that. And,
yeah.
And we took on Commonwealth Edison and big utilities. Cub
People's gas.
Is 34 years old.
Yeah.
You know, it's a third of a century. The largest consumer group in Illinois, all because people put a referendum on the ballot and voted for it. So, you know, we can make big changes. Sometimes the insiders don't like referendum. We got to make sure we take charge.
Nice to see you. You look really fit. You're working out all the time now
the
that you got a little extra
time? The best
way
to lose weight and to get younger is to pass petitions, Steve. You know, I was at Millennium Park.
I didn't know that
day.
Was a calorie counter.
It's like a Fitbit.
No. Well, you look good.
Thanks.
No, I was at Millennium Park on the 4th of July, you know, a gigantic crowd.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was going person to person. They say, are you the governor? Are you the governor?
Yeah.
Can we take a picture with you? And I said, once you sign this petition,
right.
Yeah.
No selfies without a signature. Be well. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
AM 825, Andrea, what's happening at the Capitol? We don't know, I guess.
We don't know right now. There's a lot going on right now, Steve. The U.S. Capitol has been placed on lockdown, so we don't know if there's any sort of a threat, a credible threat, or if this is just because of Dallas, but we do know that the Capitol has been put on lockdown. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have both canceled all of their campaign events for the rest of the day, possibly for the weekend, but for right now, Hillary Clinton, we already read Donald Trump's tweet from earlier today.
Well, what was it again? Do you remember? Do you have it handy?
I do have it. Let me get you Hillary's first. She said, I mourn for the officers shot while doing their sacred duty to protect peaceful protesters, for their families, and for all who serve them. And Donald Trump tweeting similar. I'll find that as well. Here it is. It's Donald Trump. This was earlier this morning. Prayers and condolences to all of the families who were so thoroughly devastated by the horrors we are watching take place in our country. Both have canceled campaign events as well. And Chicago police putting out that all call this morning. Superintendent Johnson has already reached out to Dallas police to offer CPD's deepest condolences and offer any assistance that Chicago may be able to give in responding to the tragedy. And the superintendent has also said that all officers in Chicago this weekend have to be paired up with their partners. No officers will be out there alone. It'll increase visibility and strengthen officer safety. He's also reminding all the officers to work with their community partners. Within the community, of course, to continue to promote positive engagement between officers and the residents that they are sworn to protect. That statement just moments ago.
A couple of texts here. 773, Steve, love the show, but with all due respect to the good cops who uphold the oath they serve to protecting the Constitution and serve to protect the public idea, it's a sad day. Let me ask you this. Can the law-abiding citizens feel great about things when cop cars don't even have the creed to serve and protect on the cars anymore? Is that true? I can't say that I've noticed or not noticed.
I have seen cars that say to serve and protect. I don't know how recently I've seen them.
I mean, I'm sure this person's right about what they've seen.
That's their motto.
I haven't thought about it. Honestly, the cops that drive the cars don't determine how the cars are painted or what the motto is on the car.
Right.
You become a cop for the reasons that you become a cop. Nobody becomes a cop to get rich. Nobody becomes a cop to get famous. You become a cop because it's in your blood, your heart, your desire to do the right thing. And again, the vast majority of cops hate nothing more than a bad cop because it ruins it for them. And the vast majority of protesters just want to exercise their First Amendment rights. And last night in Dallas, cops were protecting the ability, the constitutional right for those protesters to do just that. When cops were wounded, protesters went to their rescue. And when the shots rang out, cops protected protesters, including those who were holding signs that said, no justice, no peace.
Right. Absolutely.
A couple other texters. 847, Obama doesn't want to address the real issues of violence in this country. He believes that if you take away all the guns from citizens like they do in London, then everything will be hunky-dory and we can all sing kumbaya. A, I personally don't believe that's true. Second, it's not going to happen. Again, I really, as a supporter of the Second Amendment, I really wish you would hear me when I say this. Your guns will not be taken away. But if you want to make sure there's not restrictive gun rights beyond anything you've even considered, you need to insist that those who you've elected go with the will of the public. And the will of the public is to have sensible changes in the way we do gun laws, closing the background check loopholes, and limiting the capacity of magazines. One of the reasons you can't just go, well, we're just going to outlaw assault weapons, is because the manufacturers can change the way assault weapons are built so they don't fall under the category where the law is written to contain those sales. But if you stop the high-powered magazines, or I should say the high-capacity magazines, you literally give people a chance to run the next time there's a shooting like there is in Orlando. As grim as that sounds. I love this idea from the 773. President Obama should come home from Europe and go to Dallas and pray for peace and calm. I think that's a great idea.
Absolutely, he should. Yep, he's in Poland right now at NATO.
From the 770, please keep in mind today, all lives matter, regardless of race, religion, orientation, nationality, or profession. What happened in Minnesota and Louisiana is horrible. So is what happened in Dallas. Those police officers in Dallas were randomly and indiscriminately slaughtered were just as much innocent victims as the people murdered in Orlando, San Bernardino, Minnesota, Louisiana, Aurora, Colorado, Sandy Hook, and more. Mass slaughter is not the solution. We've got to get out of the tech-fueled spiral of hatred, get personally embedded in our communities, vote, volunteer, and find peaceful solutions to resolve injustices and inequality. 770, I don't know who you are, but I could never say it better than you just said it in that text. That's fabulous, and thank you for that. 829, back in a moment on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Say that our police officers put their life on the line every day is no hyperbole, ladies and gentlemen.
The suspect that we are negotiating with that has exchanged gunfire with us over the last 45 minutes has told our negotiators that the end is coming.
We also know that when people are armed with powerful weapons, unfortunately, it makes attacks like these more deadly and more tragic.
And he's going to hurt and kill more of us, meaning law enforcement, and that there are bombs all over the place in this garage and in downtown.
In the meantime, today, our focus is on the victims and their families. They are heartbroken. The entire city of Dallas is grieving. Police across America, which is a tight-knit family, feels this loss to their core. And we're grieving with them.
8:40, if you slept in this morning, you're waking up to a really, really, really terrible story. Last night at the end of a peaceful Black Lives Matter protest in Dallas, at least two, maybe as many as four snipers firing shots from what was thought to be a parking garage at a community college in Dallas, possibly another building, shooting and killing five Dallas police officers, injuring at least six others and a civilian as well, or I should say a Dallas area rapid transit officer as
yes.
well. He's among the dead. So five killed and six or seven injured, depending on the count as it's been broken down. One civilian is one of the injured. That's what we know so far. The suspect that was referred to there was, in fact, killed by police after a long standoff and threats of explosive devices going off and continuing threats, not just to the police department that tried to talk him out of doing any more damage, but they used a remote device. Frankly, I had not heard of this, but I'm glad it exists, a remote explosive device to take this guy out.
Right. It was like a robotic device.
So that's what we know of the story at its core. We also know that what Bo Jackson said that you highlighted a few moments ago, and the way we all ought to believe is the way most of us, I think, already do. And that is, as cheesy as you may think it sounds, love does win. And at a time like this, coming together, not tearing each other apart, is the right answer.
You know, during the Pride Parade, Steve, and the security was so amped up, and CPD and state police did, and the FBI did such a great job. There were police officers every, say, 20 feet, literally. And everybody from WGN, and I noticed a lot of other participants doing this too, just going up and saying thank you.
Yeah.
You know, thank you for protecting us. And many
I think that's a great way to start today. And it's not going to change the world, but it can take a step. Thank a cop. And I'd love to see cops do it, and frankly, cops do this, but I'd love to see cops as well taking some of the scare off black folks who are just minding their own business and going up and shaking their hands as well.
And included in that, transit officers and security guards, too,
yeah,
because they protect as well.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Deion Sanders has a good one, Steve, too. All lives matter. Parents, this is a teaching moment to your kids.
Speak, exactly right.
Speak into their hearts and minds and allow them to know how and why hatred and racism is wrong. And that, I mean, that's really where it starts, right?
There's no question. And the thing is, people forget how much your kids model you and whatever you say and however you behave and how they take those words and go out and you know, they blast whatever your message is, even if it's just done in a moment. You know, everybody gets upset in a moment. You may say something you regret or something you don't fully believe, but if your kids hear it and take it out and you don't take the time to explain to them what really is going on, they can repeat the message and make things worse.
My mom was a hairdresser, passed away a long time ago. She had a hairdresser in the basement. She brings up a guy at like 6 o'clock. "Hey, Mark, I want to introduce you to Mr. Smith." I'm like 6 years old. She says, "Mr. Smith's a bigot," which I didn't know what that meant, but I knew enough. And she just wanted to completely shame this guy for whatever he said down there that she didn't agree with.
You're kidding.
And so, I mean, that's...
Wow, what a powerful lesson.
Right?
That's a very cool story.
Yeah. And I was like, "Well, I'll see you later, buddy. You ain't coming back."
And did Mr. Smith leave in anger or
I mean, my memory is that he was just embarrassed and that was it. Wow. Like, it was just an
good
awkward silence.
Mom. Yeah. Good for your mom. There's a lot of emotion on the text line today, as you would imagine, at 312-981-7200. The fringe views, whatever your fringe views may be, don't help in this case. They hurt. Reverend Greg Livingston for the Coalition for Greater Chicago is one of the leading spokespeople, not just for the African-American community, but spokespeople for doing the right thing in Chicago. You know him well.
I do.
Don't.
Yeah, he organized a lot of the pre-holiday protests, marches, I should say. Very peaceful. And the first thing out of the box, out of the gate, Steve, that he said, these are going to be peaceful. You know, and he always thanks the police officers for protecting everybody. These are peaceful protests, so he's a man of peace. Of course, going to speak to the fact that this was not this. You don't solve violence with more violence,
right?
And he's going to speak to that as well.
Yeah, and I'll just echo or repeat, I guess, what I said earlier. The greatest period of civil rights movement for positive change in this country occurred when Dr. Martin Luther King was at the front of the effort, and who always preached peace. And you don't have to be too deep a student of history to understand all the times that he could have gone in the other direction and all the times he could have advocated for violence. But when he tamped that down, it was the way to get major movement done. We need courage from people that haven't shown any. We need courage in Congress. We need courage in leadership at all levels. But we know there's courage in the police department. And we know there's courage in some of the toughest neighborhoods in Chicago every single day. And we need to respect that. And we need to find a way to bring people together. And those aren't just words. It does start at the community level. You've got to be able at your communities. And I certainly hope this is the core message to every church in town this Sunday. And that is, that what are we doing? What are we doing to each other? And why are we doing this to each other? I mean, if you get up in the morning and you base your decisions in life on the color of somebody else's skin, I can't help you. But I believe you're in the minority. The vast majority of people now more than ever don't think that way. So we're not maybe as far apart as we appear on a day like this. So let's make sure that gap gets a little closer after a day like this instead of letting it make it worse. All right, 8:46, more coming up. Traffic, I got some sound I've got to get to as well. There's a bunch of things you need to hear. There's a story this week that's a big deal in the media world, but it relates to half the population that's listening. And that's a sexual harassment thing going on at Fox News. Somebody on the you're familiar with the internet? It's catching on like crazy.
I've heard of it.
Somebody on the internet did a mashup of all the times Gretchen Carlson had been essentially sexually harassed on air.
We played a little bit of it yesterday.
Yeah, we're going to play it on the air here coming up. You mean with Leth?
Yeah.
Yeah, you
it's
want
ridiculous.
Yeah. So we'll play that coming up. Also, Eric Trump, brother of Ivanka, thinks she'd be a good vice presidential candidate. We'll let you hear why. That's coming up as well. And we have some other sound to get to. Trump and Hillary have both put the campaigns on hold going forward. That seems to be the most grown-up decision either one of them have made in months. We'll see how long it takes for them to fall off that wagon. But for now, they're showing respect for the people in Dallas. And again, if you're inclined, and I hope you are, whoever your God is, get a little closer to him or her today. And say a prayer or two for the people in Dallas, the family members of the lives that have been lost, those that are injured. But for this country, man, pray for this country. Let's just stop this. Stop the insanity. 854, text her an eye for an eye only makes the whole world blind. Got a lot of text to get to before 10 at 312-981-7200. Hey, I talked to Spike Odell yesterday. He says hi to everybody.
Hi, Spike.
Including all the listeners. And he misses us, but no, he's not coming back because the weather's better in Nashville.
Spike posted a really cool picture this morning on Facebook. It was two police officers, one a white officer, the other an African-American police officer. And they were both had "His Life Matters" with an arrow pointing to the other written on each of their palm.
That's very nice.
Very nice.
You have an update on the Capitol?
I do, yeah. The Capitol Police has cleared the incident at the Capitol building. It's no longer on lockdown. The visitor, same for the visitor center as well. So all operations are back to normal. That was just a precaution.
And we're keeping an eye on Dallas, waiting for another briefing that we expect to happen sometime before 10 as well. As we continue to watch, that's the fallout from this terrible story. And again, we do believe that even though there's four suspects in custody, and until the Dallas Police Department say, we've got everybody that perpetrated this cowardly crime, that the people of Dallas are on their own form of lockdown this morning until further notice. All right, it's 8:55. I mentioned we got a couple other stories I wanted to get to. Even though the Trump and Clinton campaigns are essentially shut down for the day, if not the weekend, and believe me, I don't think it's going to last the weekend, there was some talk about the Trump VP choice coming sooner than later. Now, certainly it's going to come before the convention in Cleveland, which is a little more than a week away. The Trump campaign folks are concerned that Trump may announce it on Twitter. And then what do you got? One of the people who backed out this week, who was on the alleged short list, was Senator Corker. Senator Corker, amongst the people he mentioned when he was leaving, said, I'll tell you who the best VP candidate is. It's Ivanka. It's Ivanka.
Said that. His daughter.
Yeah, the daughter of Donald. And Ivanka would be great. Well, it's important to have family support, and Eric Trump says that Ivanka would be great, too. Here's how he feels she qualifies.
I agree, right? She's got the beautiful looks. Right? She's smart. She's smart.
She's 35?
Hey, she certainly got my vote. And she'll just be 35. Her birthday is right at the end of October, right? So she just makes that by about 7-8 days.
And she definitely has the business sense. My gosh, every store amazing. I go in, the shoes, the jewelry.
That's Fox and Friends. She has the business sense, the shoes, the jewelry.
That couldn't be real life right there. That did not just happen.
That's why Saturday Night Live doesn't do that bit much anymore with them, because they can't write it funnier than it actually
no,
is.
No, it's true.
My gosh, every she's store amazing. I go in, she's the amazing. Shoes, the jewelry.
She's referring there to the go. Fashion line, but it could have come across more narrow-minded or goofy. Meanwhile, at Fox News, Fox got some problems. The Gretchen Carlson sexual harassment lawsuit, she claimed she was fired because she wouldn't sleep with Roger Ailes, the guy that is the chairman of Fox News. And is now, would you tell me, 76?
Yeah, 76.
That's a lot of Viagra. Gretchen Carlson, his show was canceled at the end of June, and she came out this week with this lawsuit. Somebody put together a full mashup of all the sexist remarks ever directed just at Gretchen Carlson. This doesn't include the 10-plus women who have now gone to Gretchen Carlson's attorney and said, yeah, me too. Here's that.
Some guy came up to me and said, I saw you on Fox and Friends this morning. Is Gretchen as cute in person as she is on TV?
And what did you answer, Eric?
Gorgeous. Look at her today. Beautiful dress. You look wonderful. Gretchen,
how are you?
You look wonderful. Gretchen, very, very beautiful dress. That's a great color, right? In summary, Gretchen's beautiful.
Beautiful. You look beautiful.
Well,
thank
you look fabulous, too.
Thank
Brian, can you tell Gretchen she is definitely winning today? She looks amazing.
Wow.
And no, it's not because Fox and Friends is too hot, but Gretchen is really too hot. Blame her.
And skirts. Gretchen, I guess what you're wearing right now, the skirt might cause some problems.
It would not be advisable for the pandemic.
Gretchen is going to ride the mechanical bull live from our snowy plaza.
And a lot of viewers are concerned that I'm going to have the skirt on when I do it.
I'm not sure, but concerned, that's an interesting word.
Doesn't
waxing
trouble.
Hurt?
It does. He looks at me for that.
We'll try that on an upcoming episode of Fox and Friends.
All right, would you like to correct yourself on that other talking point about men being dominant?
Oh, we don't have any time. I wish I did. We're running over.
Okay, because HR's on the phone because you called me a skirt.
Yeah, that's. I apologize.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to read that manual again.
I'll bring it to your office right after the show. Yeah.
It's not something that's unusual for this business, but when you take it from that to the level that she reported and has put to paperwork in this lawsuit, you know, her legal claims, that Roger Ailes would say things like, let me see your ass when you walk out the door.
Right.
And by the way, that's the cleanest of the comments that came up. And Roger Ailes, who was told many people that he would hire a woman at Fox News if he could imagine having sex with her, he'd hire a man at Fox News. These are the on-air folks. If you could imagine going to a game with him and not being annoyed. So, like, he could be the new Bill Cosby of Fox News. I don't know. Time will tell. But as more and more women come out to talk about this, it's not a good week to be Roger Ailes, the leader of Fox News. There are other stories to talk about as well. Obviously, our focus is almost completely on Dallas this morning.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
909. Hey, Jake, you know what else we need to get to is some of the James Comey testimony from yesterday. As the United States Congress decided, let's see how much more time we can waste, and brought in the director of the FBI to grill him for hours and hours and hours. So we'll play back some of that. Benjamin Bornstein is here, and obviously we're keeping an eye on Dallas in the midst of everything else, but we wanted to have Benjamin still come in. He was booked before all that went down in Dallas, because there's a very important event coming up. And as you know, we spend a lot of time on the show talking about trying to get you out to things that we think have value, not just for you, but for everybody. And Benjamin Bornstein's here. Good morning, Benjamin.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Steve?
Doing fine. Thanks for coming in. Tell us about Immerman's Angels. What is it?
Sure. So Immerman Angels, what we do, we're the leading in the world now at one-on-one cancer matchups. So what happens is if you're a man, a woman, you've got a certain type of cancer, we find somebody with the exact same cancer type and match you up to somebody that's been through that process and beaten the very same disease, same protocol, and so forth.
It's like a mentor, a sponsor, a coach, a cheerleader, all those things?
100%, yeah. And we're doing it now in all 50 states and 60 countries, but we're based right here in Chicago.
That's a cool idea. And you've been with the group how long?
I've been full-time as CEO and executive director just since January and on the board of directors for many years.
How are you funded?
We are funded all privately. So the key to this service is we offer it to the cancer fighters and caregivers entirely free.
Well, that's not easy to do. And that's one of the reasons I want to mention the run, which we'll get to in a second. But you got a website for people to go to?
We sure do. It's ImmermanAngels.org, ImmermanAngels.org.
Who's Immerman?
So Johnny Immerman is the founder of the group. 10 years ago, he founded this. Cancer survivor, two-time testicular cancer survivor. He had the idea because when he went through his experience, he had a great medical team, great support from family and friends, but he didn't have that like-minded individual that had been through the exact same experience that could show him exactly what would happen and how to get to the other side.
Yeah, and that's crucial, right? I mean, you're a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Three-time survivor myself.
What type of cancer?
I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma as a kid back in 1985. I was a baseball player. I actually fortuitously got hit by a pitch right on the tumor site, and that's how I found it.
That was a God moment.
Yeah, it really was. Made it through 18 months of chemo experimental protocol that eventually became the standard of care. And in 85, just like Johnny's experience, there really wasn't much in terms of the psychosocial support angle to your cancer experience.
So for those of us who are blessed not to have dealt with what you've dealt with so far, do you wait for the other shoe to drop? Are you clean now? Where are you at medically?
Yeah, so medically totally fine. I did have a second cancer experience in 99. Made it through that. It was a squamous cell head and neck cancer, tongue cancer. Made it through that, and then I had a skin cancer just a couple years ago. But my
dude,
advice at 45,
it's enough.
At 45 years old, having been through it, Steve, three times, my advice to folks is catch things early, see your doctor.
Don't ignore stuff, right? I mean, if that little voice inside you says something could be wrong, go to the doctor.
100%. That's the key.
Yeah, without doubt. Well, I'm glad you're good.
Yeah, no, everything's been good medically now. And because I live the experience, Steve, and I've seen the evolution of cancer care and the psychosocial side of the cancer experience, it just made sense to me to come out of the business world and come in as a CEO just in January of this year.
Talk about the peer-to-peer piece of this, which is the core of what you guys do at Immerman's Angels and why it's important.
Yeah, so, I mean, the key is you take somebody with an exact similar experience going through their world, haven't been turned upside down, who has the answers to those questions and can provide that hope to the cancer fighter or the caregiver. I would mention to you, Steve, we provide this exact same service to the caregivers, the parent of a child going through cancer, the brother or sister, or the spouse of somebody going through cancer.
Do the same kind of matchup?
Exact same kind of matchup. And the third element that we've just introduced recently is matching up survivors to survivors, because those guys also have found a common bond in sharing their latent effects and experiences as they are 5-10 years out sometimes.
So do you feel like a lot of folks who, like you, are survivors want to pay it forward and step up and do this?
100%. A lot of our mentors actually come in through the process of having been mentored in the first place and having an angel. They in turn become mentors and get back on the other side.
That's a pretty impressive organization. Is there a way to quantify how many people are involved at any given time, or their fluid nature to it?
100%. We've now done 26,000 people been involved with matchups and connections.
26,000?
26,000.
I mean, I know a lot of people are dealing with this, but that's a lot of matchups.
It's a lot of matches. There's always more we can do, and we're growing very rapidly. But the 26,000 has been a huge number for us. The mentor database of mentor angels is now over 7,000, and we have over 100 cancers and subtypes in the database.
I'm sure you're good for most cancers, but if somebody is listening and go, I'd love to do this, I'd love to be somebody who could coach and cheer somebody on, are you looking for those type of folks?
We are definitely looking for that, yeah. So ImmermanAngels.org gives you the opportunity to come in and sign up to be a mentor angel, to seek support, and all of our events. As you mentioned earlier, we are funded through these events and private giving and so forth, so we have a number of those that we put on as well.
I tell you, in a day of really terrible news, it's uplifting to hear this story.
Yeah, no, we're really positive about what we do. We come to work every day with a dedicated staff. We have tons of volunteers, board members around the country as well, and a great medical advisory board, too. And all of those come together to make this happen.
Well, good for you. When's the run?
So July 23rd, we're doing a great event over at Montrose Harbor.
2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. 8:30 in the morning. It's called the Brunch Run 5K. It's our own event that we put on. We're targeting over 1,000 runners this year. And the key to this event, there's lots of 5Ks in town.
Sure.
We put on an amazing brunch experience. blue plate.
You're going to eat, kids.
Right. So it's only 5K. There's a mimosa bar. There's a coffee bar. And Blue Plate is catering it, which is one of the best caterers in town. So we really think that it's a family-friendly, amazing event for folks to come out to. Fairly inexpensive to sign up for. And we have a website for that too, brunchrun5k.com, where you can actually register for that event.
And I assume both sites link back to each other?
Yeah. I mean, ImmermanAngels.org is a great place to start, where you can learn more about the organization. And you'll see the Brunch Run banner on that site as well.
What's the WGN promotional code for?
So you get $10 off in registration, $10 off.
Such a deal.
WGN. We're looking out for you guys.
Yeah. So use promo code WGN when you sign up.
100% for $10 off registration.
I will tell you, if you're listening to the show and you use the promo code and you save $10, give $20 back.
There you go. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Impressive. Very impressive. It's a great story. And stay healthy yourself. I want you to spell the website again, though, so people don't get frustrated.
Sure. So Immerman Angels is ImmermanAngels.org. Angels.org.
All right. Easy enough. ImmermanAngels.org. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
We need a little boost.
Yeah, we appreciate it. We're doing good work over there.
9:16. We'll come back, do more on 720 WGN. All right, 9:20. I've been looking forward to meeting you for a while, Rev. I'm sorry it's under these circumstances. But Reverend Greg Livingston is here. We got a microphone in front of you there? If not, let's get one there. And from the Coalition for Greater Chicago. Why don't we start there? What do you guys do?
Well, the organization was basically catalyzed by the Laquan McDonald shooting. Before that time, I've served in a lot of different areas here in Chicago as a pastor. I used to be the National Field Secretary for the Rainbow Push Coalition. Jesse and I traveled the world together. And so a lot of different things, but it was catalyzed by that, and that we needed an organized front in order to deal with what we saw was a real injustice to the American people, to the citizens of Chicago, in terms of being disenfranchised by what we saw as basically an alleged cover-up of a diabolical deed.
Sure. And here's what we know. Mm-hmm. And if you disagree, certainly tell me. Every cop doesn't get up in the morning and go, I'm going to kill a black kid today. And people in the Black Lives Matter protest movement don't get up and go, I'm going to kill a cop today. So let's get rid of the fringe element beliefs right now, and let's actually get to a solution. Because we got to clean up the police departments, find the racists, and send them packing. Put them in jail, do whatever you need to do to make sure that happens. But we also have to make sure that people understand your First Amendment right to protest is sacred, and we need people like you coming in, speaking out about this, so that people understand the protesters in Dallas. And again, listen, I can't help you if you're on the fringe. But if you're in the middle and willing to see the other side, spend 2 minutes online today, and you'll see videos of protesters helping wounded cops.
Right.
You'll see videos of cops standing next to protesters with signs that say no justice, no peace, and they're taking smiling selfies together. People want to get along. Mm-hmm. They just want a solution to this.
Sure. You know, I mean, all human beings, if you live long enough, you find out that we all have the capacity for violence. And there are various triggers that bring that about. But most of us learn how to manage our tempers and our ability to express our discomfort with whatever. And you have bad people in every profession. There are bad mechanics that will not fix your car and still charge you.
And there's bad talk show hosts.
But you're the best, Steve.
Yeah, okay.
Next to Andrea.
Yeah, exactly.
But so even in the case of police departments like Chicago, you have two Chicago police departments. You have the good cops, you have the bad cops. The majority are good cops. They just want to do their job. They want to go home to their families. Then you have some of the bad cops that get caught up in fantasies. They want to be Wyatt Earp cowboys. They want to be hunters and all that. And then a lot of it comes down to, as well, in terms of the American tradition, American history of racism. And some of that is steeped in the whole fact that the public guardian, which I believe Plato talks about in the Republic, is the one that is responsible for maintaining the status quo. And so the status quo in America is that, you know, we were second-class citizens, not first-class. And so much of this, in terms of American police departments coming up over the past couple of centuries, that you have to know your place. And this is really, you know, it's interesting. For instance, like the Chicago Fire Department, 5,000 Chicago firemen, but 2,500 live in one ward. And that comes from generational hiring. So then when you try to, you know, get minorities hired or people that have been on the outside, women and the like, well, you have this thing that is basically embedded and entrenched in the consciousness of a city and our DNA. So that's just a piece just in terms
of. But you got to break a system to make a better system.
Yes. And I think, Steve, that the one thing we have to do, yes, we have to keep calm. We have to be able to talk and to think critically. But we're not going to do anything by being politically correct about the situation. That's only going to hurt it.
Because I agree.
Yeah, you know, because all you're doing is just pretending that it's not as bad as it really is.
No, but the point I want to make, too, is that.
I wasn't saying you were being that way.
No, I understand. Yeah. But the point I also want to make, too, is along with citing the fact that, look, there's nothing worse for good cops than bad cops. Mm-hmm. Bad cops make it terrible for everybody. But there's nothing worse for a legitimate protest movement to try to fix these problems than people who say we're upset and we're part of Black Lives Matter, so we're going to kill some cops. There's racist black folks. There's racist white folks. If you get up in the morning and think you're better than somebody because of the color of your skin and the color of theirs, you're the problem. You're the coward.
Yeah, I think, and even to be somewhat technical, I believe there are bigots, but racism is something different institutional. Because, for instance, in America, blacks have never crafted laws or legislation to restrict the citizenship of white folk. But you flip the script and the other has occurred. So there are consequences to that kind of tradition. And so then when you start to change the laws, people's heart don't always track with the change in laws. Culture doesn't track with change. It takes a while for that to catch up. And there are individuals that like the advantage that something like racism, sexism, whatever, all the isms gives them. And so then when you say, I'm going to take that away and make everything equal, then you run into real problems. But in terms of this Dallas piece, in terms of Minnesota, in terms of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you know, we're sitting in a situation where there's this war that is brewing in the communities, in the cities. And I was so upset with the mayor. He's more interested in giving $1 billion to Star Wars. And we have Chicago Wars right here that could use $1 billion that would make a difference for kids, youth, people everywhere. $1 billion would change things for Chicago Wars. No, forget Star Wars. You right. Made me almost cuss, man. But anyway.
Listen, if you're going to do it, this is the show.
There you go.
But Reverend, you make a great point, too, as far as peace and respect. I think you have to earn respect to get respect. So I think the police officers need to respect the community, but the community needs to respect the police officers as well. And you lead by example when you were holding these, and I don't even call them protests, these marches.
Civic engagements
during the Laquan McDonald. You were down here at 5:60 in the morning we had you on because you were meeting with the police.
Oh yeah.
So it has to be
listen, but you gotta get kids early too, because a lot of homes, and again, this is not just a black thing, this is a white thing, mm-hmm. a brown thing, a yellow thing, this is an everything.
Sure.
You have kids that come from broken homes, or mm-hmm. kids that don't have central loving relationships in their lives. They're going to look for a home, and their family ends up being a gang or something else. So you need to get the kids as early as possible. You know what? You remember the old DARE program?
Oh, yeah.
And the DARE program got knocked a lot. But I'm telling you, if you sit down with a fifth grader back in the day and he told the fifth grader how destructive drugs were, it was a problem. I don't know why we don't have something like that in schools for engagement with cops and kids.
Well, I'm older than you, Steve, and I remember Officer Friendly. When he would come right. around to the school, and you he would put handcuffs on you.
Yeah.
But there was no uproar or anything like that. He was saying, be a good kid, be a good citizen, this, that, and the other. You know, but I was thinking too, Steve, I was at the Homeland Security Summit last September, and they were talking about how ISIS reaches 90,000 youth through social media
right.
every day.
Right.
And they began to break it down to us, all of these three-letter agencies, CIA, FBI, all and that. And so all of a sudden you have some young kid who isn't deprived living in the suburbs. And this isn't politically correct, but this is real. And so this young man, he's a Muslim. He becomes radicalized.
Right.
Right? He doesn't have a need. He isn't starving.
Right.
So then he goes to the inner city where there are people that have some very physical, real needs. So all of a sudden, we'll give you money. We'll give you guns. And if you need some product to sell, we'll help you with drugs as well.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, what happens, this individual has status, human significance. And then they're open to other things. So now you hear about black people, you know, Baptists and Pentecostal
sure.
joining ISIS.
Right.
And so there's a reason behind all of that. And so I think what we really have to do, Andre, to your point as well, is to move away from this. Well, not to forget about the symptoms, but we have to really look at the cause. Right. And I tweeted something this morning. And I paraphrased Dr. King that peace is not the absence of violence. It is the presence of justice. And so justice is about leveling out the inequalities, because when you have 50 schools closed in Chicago and people don't understand that that don't live in those areas, how destabilized the communities become.
Right.
And then can I just add this? I went to Governor Rauner, I went to Barry Emanuel, I said, look, it's costing us $1 million a day to keep these schools open. Why don't we go to some, you know, big tech giant like Google, have them to fund the infrastructure and turn these schools into digital training centers?
Absolutely.
Many of these kids were born in this century. Guess what? They don't know anything about analog systems.
Sure,
digital
sure.
is normative to them.
Right.
But guess what? There's no political will. And so what happens is you find the communities that are frozen in a crisis posture, and only in the heat of crisis do we then begin to move. And then once the crisis cools down, we are frozen into that posture again. And we have to find a way of breaking that cycle in order to, because guess what? It's just starting to get hot. And I hate to say it, we've all been here for a while. Man, this thing is brewing. People are upset. They don't know how. That guy with the weapon in Texas,
yeah,
it was probably legally owned. So a gun right. law is not going to affect that. You know, this was him. You know, I'm not pushing for or trying to advocate anything in terms of gun laws, but I'm saying this individual was ready. They were all ready.
Well, I mean, yeah, ready, yeah. ready, planned, and
ready
then,
to die.
Yeah, and ready to die and willing to die.
Yes.
I can't imagine, and I think everybody needs to own this as well, unless you do live there. I can't imagine what it's like when you send your kid to school in Englewood or West Englewood. You know, or anywhere in town where there's
right.
trouble.
Garfield Park,
or Riverdale.
You
know,
well,
I can't imagine what parents. I
grew up right next door to Beverly. I grew up in Washington Heights. All right, and so when you crossed, what was that street? I forget now. It might have been Longwood, whatever. But when you crossed that street, the whole world changed. And I was the only black kid back then who could walk through Ridge Park. The only one. We were playing basketball one day, and so in the park, and the parents come out. With ladders, and they take the rims down, right? You know, and everything. And we're there, we're looking, we go back and tell our parents. My parents are from the South. They're like, look, be cool, all this kind of stuff. We come back the next day, there's a big swastika painted on the roof of the field house. But hear me now. But then some of my best buddies, we were all together. We're good. I'm talking about white guys in Beverly, my Southside Irish, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was still off of Western on St. Patty's Day, though, because at Fox's Pub and stuff, man, they were jumping, you know? But, you know, I'm just being honest, man. You know, But it's about communication. It's about doing things together. We got to find the good people who say, let's do some things together. Let's build some things together. Let's create some things together. Because the only way we're going to get to know each other is by actually doing something together. Let's put our hands in the dirt together. And then as we get to know each other, you'll find guys in prison. They may belong to different gangs. You may have, you know, the Black Guerrilla family. You may have the Aryan Brotherhood, the Latins, you know, the Latinos. But when they start bringing these individuals together on some of these farms and things like that, and they begin to work in that dirt or do whatever, even though they may put up a front, I've talked to these guys. You know, they start saying, wait a minute, I have more in common with him than I do with my you know, racial brother over
yeah,
here
yeah.
because we have these interests, you
right.
know. And so
you find out that people are people.
Yeah, it has to be flesh touching flesh.
Yeah.
You know, the only way you reproduce something is that flesh has to touch flesh. And there's going to be some friction, but friction brings about change.
All right, so if you and I are both going to eliminate the fringe
mm-hmm.
and work on the people in the middle because the middle solves the problem, I want you to stick around for a segment
yes,
here
sir.
So we can talk about it a little bit more. Because I also want to talk about what people can do as opposed to just going, well, I sure wish I could do something. I want to give people some action here. I want to give people something they can do to legitimately help.
Yes, sir.
9:31. Let's get to the big story now. Next, take a quick break. Come back. 720 WGN.
to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
942. You know, we can talk about Dallas all day, or you could do something about Dallas. You could do something about Baton Rouge. You can do something about Falcon Heights outside of St. Paul, and you can do something about people getting together and not tearing each other apart. And that's one of the reasons we were very pleased to have Reverend Gregory Livingston, founder and CEO of the Coalition for a New Chicago, here in the studio. You and I are about the same age, and we were talking off the air a second ago about the way we grew up, the way your parents grew up. Now, I grew up around a bunch of redneck hunters in upstate New York. Had guns all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we always had guns growing up. People hunted. Your parents grew up in the South, right?
Guns everywhere.
Right. Yeah. And the difference was, if you and I had a dispute, we'd put the guns down.
That was the coward's way.
Right, the coward's way. You put the guns down. You settle it with your fists. That's you settle it by screaming at each other. You settle it the way you settle it. But if you shot somebody, the first people to drive you to the police department would be the people that were standing next to you. Now the gun is the solution.
Right, we've abdicated, and I don't mean to be genderist or sexist when I say this, but we've abdicated our manhood.
Yeah.
You know, we've left manhood behind for practicality in terms of solving for conflict resolution. And when you do that, you know, when you take manliness out of the equation, which is what's happening, and I'm not afraid to say that, well, then you end up having 6'6" boys going at each other instead of men.
Right.
And that creates a huge problem because boys don't have the emotional maturity or life experience to deal with situations that a man would. So we need to raise men, not big boys.
All right. So when you have folks who can be listening right now, and they're well-meaning folks and they want to help, but they go, well, the churches, the communities, they got to do more. You're in these communities all the time.
Sure.
You're a reverend. Mm-hmm. Are the churches doing everything they can? Are they speaking out as much as they should? I'm teeing you up, buddy. I know I'm teeing you up, but I'm teeing you up to tell the truth of what's happening.
Thank you. You know, let me say this first. You know, one first has to prepare one's mind and one's spirit for the battle that's ahead. By that, I mean, we need a massive overhaul. But there's no such thing as an unbloody birth. Every birth is going to be painful, it's going to be laborious, it's going to be screaming, yelling, and everything, but one has to have the vision, the faith to know that on the other side of this pain, there's going to be joy, there's going to be a new baby that comes forth. So our churches, our community groups, we need a new vision. We need not just one of patching people up. You know, at Christ Hospital in Oakland, their trauma center handles so many of these gunshot wounds, you know, these penetrating wounds, whatever they call them, and the chief surgeon up there is Dr. Yolanda Thompson, a black woman. She said, I'm tired of patching up our people, black people. She said, I'm tired. Because she's the one that does all that. She's the one that all of a sudden here's a kid that was walking an hour ago that will never walk again. You know, she's just tired. I don't know how she takes it.
I don't know how she does it.
Without a doubt. But she says, you know, I'm just patching up. We have to move. We still need patches. We have to move beyond the patching to a way of how can we create a new being? How can we overhaul a community? And there are ways to do it. And I think that black, white, yellow, brown, whatever religion, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, you know, Zoroastrian, you know, whatever. Sure. We have to come together on something that's very simple. Let's go down. Let's clean a street together. But intentionally have a diverse group do it. Oftentimes in the hood, you'll see, again, nothing wrong with it. You'll see an all-white church group coming to the hood for the summer to paint
right.
or something like
right,
that,
right.
you know. But there has to be something that changes that because they need a new experience.
Right.
Because I've sat down with some of these groups before. They'll come in, and they have sympathy but no empathy.
Right.
Because they have not actually walked in this other person's shoes. You know, and so
you can't be in the neighborhood going, where'd I park the car?
Right.
You can't be in the neighborhood going, yeah, I can't talk to you right now, young man, because I'm concerned that somebody might do a drive by. You gotta embed.
But if I took a black church group out to Wilmette or Glencoe, a bunch of people to start going down the street, I'm telling you, man, it would be a different response.
Yeah.
But that's crucial. And that's what Dr. King did when he would march. You know, he says, okay, here we are. We're making you uncomfortable. But the uncomfortability is necessary.
Right.
Because unless you can feel uncomfortable or even feel our pain, we talked about with the demonstrations that we wanted to redistribute the pain. Why are you upsetting our shopping season? Why are you messing with our job? Because you need to feel what some of your brothers and sisters feel in order to get you activated.
Listen,
to get you going.
I thought you guys were wrong when you started that.
Sure.
I said it on the air, but then I got it. I got it, and that, you know, because I grew up in the same area
sure.
you grew up in. But the original message, I didn't get it either. But I understand it.
Because what would have happened if there had been no protests?
Right.
If the video had come out and nobody did anything, we would be in a different place right now.
Yeah, exactly right, yeah. Because nothing would have moved.
Yes.
Now, this also comes down to leadership, or in this case, lack of leadership. You know, Congress is gutless. You can tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I have maybe an idealistic faith that this next generation of kids coming up, my kids are 29 and 25. I'm a first-time grandfather, a little six-month-old.
Congratulations.
The labels, thank you, the labels that our generation put on everybody, it's not perfect, but they are falling off. They are going away. So if we encourage these kids that are doing the right thing, that don't look at another kid and go, that's my black friend, mm-hmm. or that's my white friend, the world's got to get better, doesn't it?
Black and white are terms that are represent socio-political constructs that are only partially genetic. So then when you take black, you say African-American, white people, that doesn't work, because black is a white people that are Italian-American, Irish-American, Polish-American, when they talk about themselves as white, it has to be done within the context of a black. So blacks that are, since we don't know our African heritage, many of us that are Mississippi American, Louisiana American, Georgia American, well, you know, people that identify themselves, even in Chicago, blacks will separate themselves west side, south side, right? You know, and everything in terms of, as opposed to nationality, whereas whites, you know, Little Italy, you know, all this kind of stuff. But then when it comes down to when we have to work together, then the construct comes up, black and white. And the constructs are intentional when they're designed. The white construct is about being unlimited. The black construct is about being limited. So then in terms of labels, again, as you say, once we understand the purpose of these labels, the constructs they represent, and we are intentional about dropping that,
right?
Then all of a sudden we can do something different, because now the label does not give me an expectation of you anymore.
Right.
I'm looking at you just like I look at myself.
Right.
You know, if I'm a ball player, you know, I mean, they do it in athletics, black athlete, white athlete.
Yeah.
Guess what? And on that field, black athlete is superior. Let's just be honest.
Absolutely.
White athlete is not, you know, so you're like, oh, he's a fast white guy. You never hear say he's a fast black guy. You know, that white guy can really jump. You never say a black guy can really jump. You know what I'm saying? It's expected.
Right.
With the label on one side, you know? So I'm just saying, yeah, dropping those labels, they'll get me in trouble.
No,
Steve.
You're right. No, listen, you're not getting any argument from me.
But it's just real. It's real.
And it is. And it comes down to what Dr. King said, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the color of your skin. It's the content of your character.
That's right.
And you got to live in the content of somebody's character.
That's right.
I think getting rid of the labels is so important, too, because we all come from the same place. We all go to the same place.
Sure.
I mean, people are stunned when I say I grew up on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
I was born at Christ Hospital.
All right.
You know, yeah. So people say, but they'll say that, really? Oh, this white woman. But I think a lot of it boils down, again, to respect from both the community and from law enforcement. There has to be that equivalent, that respect.
Well, I back up 1,000%
of that. To you too.
Yeah, back up 1,000% of that. So we're going to run out of time, but I want you to be one of our guys here. I want you to be one of our regular guys, because we need you.
I like Darryl. I like Andrea more, though.
Well, I don't doubt that. As
and,
you
and the guy here from NCIS, you know. Yeah.
Mark Carmen.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Robert.
But for the cops in these neighborhoods.
Yes, sir.
The worst thing imaginable would be if the cops gave up on the toughest neighborhoods in the city. So for the morale problem that exists in the police department, because they think that people are out to get the cops, does it exist with the cops you see, or do you see cops in the neighborhoods all the time who get it, they care, they know it's a tough job, but they want to be there?
There are a lot who get it, but the ones who don't get it cause the problem. You know, rest in peace, Jerry McCarthy, but he made a huge error when he arrested the leaders of the gangs. And I'll tell you why. We're not condoning crime, but there were times we can go to these leaders and say, look, tell your guys to get away from the school at 3:00.
You're right about that.
Because, you know, kids are coming out.
You're right about that.
And most of these guys will cooperate. But then when he chopped off all the heads.
There's no organization.
Well, it's renegades.
Now.
These young guys, I mean, they're out there, man. It is crazy. And so all of a sudden they're just shooting people. I mean, you see all these shootings now, you know, and everything. And the shootings don't even tell you how many were maimed and permanently injured. So then guess what? In terms of money. That's more money on the state and the taxpayer as well, because you got to take care of this kid, this person now who's been paralyzed or whatever, you know. I had a nephew who was shot in the head in 1995, identical twins, he and his brother. His gang thought he was his brother. They were in different gangs, believe it or not. And he was paralyzed on his right side, you know what I mean, up at Christ Hospital and everything. So I have some firsthand experience with this, because – and I failed with my nephew. I failed, you know. What I'm saying is I know how hard it is to get through.
Sure.
You know, and not get through. And so, but what I understood is, okay, I got some experience, and I know what to do next time for somebody else. Maybe if I didn't get my own blood, my own kin, maybe I can reach somebody else. And maybe somebody else can reach him. You know, but if all of us are sitting there afraid, we got to understand, it ain't easy. It's painful. It's bloody. You know, and I use blood in this term figuratively, but we have to do it because this is it. I mean, where else are we going to go? You know, Chicago's not going to be on Mars.
No, and we better make it better.
Yeah, I mean, Derrick Rose is gone. You know,
no,
Joakim is gone. And Derrick Wade. Ooh, Derrick, wow.
It's close enough.
Dwayne Wade's coming home, but he's got my knees. That's no good.
Exactly. You know, but even his mother and the tragedy she suffered a few years ago and all that, and what he's trying to do. But one person can't do it. One celebrity can't do it. It's about everybody coming together, you know. It really
so
is.
Here's the thing. We'll leave you with this because we're way long here, but I want you to come back. Mm-hmm. No, don't apologize. You're going to church on Sunday, wherever you're going to church on Sunday. You talk to your church, you talk to your small groups, you talk to your people. You say, what are we going to do? Mm-hmm. What are we going to do? And it's got to be more than we're going to come down, we're going to paint a house, and we're going to go back home. You know, what are we going to do? How can we tie into a church in the neighborhoods and the inner city to do something else? And then secondarily, and we can talk more about this next time you come in, we need a list of good names of politicians who are trying to affect change, because those are the people we want to vote for in the fall. And the ones that aren't getting it done or are hiding, those are the people we want out. So next time we talk, let's do that.
Thank you, Steve. It was great to be here.
God bless you.
Thank you. You too.
Nice to see you. Wendy off again today. Bill and Elton.
That's right.
Wendy coming up in a second.
Jim, not John.
I got a couple of texts I want to get to you before we take our last break and come back. 630, I live in the Fox Valley area. Every time I come into contact with a police officer, I thank them for protecting us. How many awful events have to take place before this stops? 630, I know the media needs to report and discuss horrible events, but I wish they'd pay more attention to the good stories that are happening. I'm white. I'm a fundraising consultant who has the privilege of working with an extraordinary high school in Waukegan who work exclusively with low-income students. 99% of them are minority kids. White people are working in unity with minority to give these young people the opportunities to realize their potential. We need more conversation about stuff like that instead of the bad stuff. You can check out their stores. I'll give you the website. It's Christo Rey is the name of the organization. It's St. Martin College Prep. If you go to Christo, C-R-I-S-T-O, Rey, R-E-Y, ChristoReySt.Martin.org, you can see some of that. The words of Abraham Lincoln, all the armies of Europe and Asia could not by force take a drink from the Ohio River or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. As a nation of free men, we will live forever or die by suicide. The point being, if we don't stop the lunacy, we will literally end up killing ourselves. And then there's this, and this is my favorite text of the morning because this is the listener that I just want to, you know, to take home and spend the weekend with. Well, not without their permission, obviously. Please keep in mind that all lives matter. This is from a 770. Please keep in mind that all lives matter, regardless of race, religion, orientation, nationality, or profession. What happened in Minnesota and Louisiana is horrible. So is what happened in Dallas. Those police officers in Dallas were randomly and indiscriminately slaughtered. We're just as much innocent victims as the people murdered in Orlando, San Bernardino, Minnesota, Louisiana, Aurora, Colorado, Sandy Hook, and beyond. Mass slaughter is not the solution. We have to get out of the tech-fueled spiral of hatred and get personally embedded in our communities. Vote, volunteer, and find peaceful solutions to resolve injustices and inequalities. And thank you for all of your texts this morning. Back in a moment on 720 WGN.